So I spent a bunch of time thinking about Solomon because, you know, whenever you summarize a person's whole life and career, there's a lot of information. Ray mentioned the patriarchs. And I thought, well, what does it kind of boil down to related to Solomon? And this passage, the passage that kept coming to mind, it's in two of the different Gospels. Jesus talks about the queen from the south coming up to see the wisdom, you know, of Solomon, and says something greater than Solomon is here. And I thought, I've been thinking about that all week, about greater than Solomon, greater than Solomon. And there's a reason that that was used as an example. And I'll get into that in just a second. But I started thinking about wisdom. And I thought about his wisdom and how, you know, from a man perspective, person perspective, he was a very wise individual. But it didn't carry over into his life. And you guys know the story. And I want to get back to this verse in a second, but before I move into that, I want to talk a little bit about Solomon. I did some research, got on the interwebs once again. Combining all of King Solomon's assets of precious metal tribute, which was 25 tons of gold annually, and he got that for 40 years, his trade wealth and his other kingdom valuations, some believe the present-day comparisons would be over $2.1 trillion in actual wealth, like hands-on wealth that was held in Israel by a king of Israel. And apparently that is a lot. I boggle beyond $1,000, you know. I think I've accumulated that a couple of times for a while, you know. And it struck me about, you know, here you have every possible advantage. And not only did he have every possible advantage, and he had this tribute, and he had people coming from, you know, had Queens of Sheba coming to see him. Not only that, he had been given the wisdom of God as a gift to him, just totally by God's grace. So that made me think about this verse, and I was thinking about you, and I was thinking about me, and obviously I'm not going to have the opportunity to be a 2.1 trillionaire ever at any point in my life, at least nothing on the horizon, but I'll let you know if it happens. I guess the lottery is my only hope, right? That poor woman who won, can you imagine? Have they done any follow-up on people who win the lottery and what happens to their lives? I think there are books that are written about it. I don't want to read them. I don't want to know. I like to think somebody gets $1 million or $10 million or $100 million, and they just go living happily ever after, but I don't think it always works that way. So that got me to thinking about this particular verse, because I don't want the wisdom of Solomon. I want the reflections of the wisdom of Solomon because it was given by God. I want the wisdom of God in my life and in my heart. And if you look at David, King David, he experienced the wisdom of God in his life, even though he was never a multi-trillionaire, and even though he didn't have nearly as many wives and concubines as his son Solomon did, he had a heart connection with God that was very unique. So that got me to thinking about wisdom. Next week, we're going to talk about lady wisdom. And just the whole idea, and well, actually the next couple of weeks, the whole idea about what that means, lady wisdom. Because lady wisdom is the wisdom of God. It's a wisdom that Solomon apparently was not able to appropriate. But this particular verse came to mind when I think about Solomon. So something greater than Solomon is here. I think this is the greater. I think when Jesus was describing himself and he was saying something greater than Solomon is here, he was describing this kind of wisdom. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, and without hypocrisy. There's nothing in any of those statements right there that have anything to do at all with accumulating any kind of value except in here. And as it relates to in there when it comes to other people. And so I thought through each one of those things because that's the wisdom that I'm looking for. I don't want to be the brightest bulb on the block. I don't want to be the person that is the best in my field. I want to experience God's wisdom in my life. So I thought about that a little bit, and I thought about the term, the wisdom that is from above. And when you look up the word above, it basically means kind of like a back and forth. So it's an amplifying word that's saying it's not just the wisdom that comes from above, it's a back and forth kind of wisdom. So the wisdom from above goes back and forth. It goes before the throne of God. It comes to human beings when people ask for wisdom, which is the verse that we read a little bit earlier and that we did in the heart team. You know, if you're lacking wisdom, ask of God, who gives to all men liberally. And he doesn't hold back, nor does he look down on you for having to ask for his wisdom. He knows that we are short on wisdom, even if we're the wisest person, perhaps, who has ever lived on the face of the earth, King Solomon. So it's a back and forth. And as I thought about that, I thought, okay, well, what's the back and forth in each one of these things that's in the definition? The first one is pure. You know, you guys and I, we can't find purity here. You know, it has to be imported. Impurity had to be, purity had to be brought from heaven because earth is impure. So the back and forth of the wisdom of God is going and dipping into the well of God's purity and bringing God's purity back into the world. That's what the wisdom is that's from above. Holy because of reverence. How many people do you know that reverence God? I don't know. I mean, we're a pretty tight-knit group. I would guess that there's probably, 20,000 people in Des Moines that actually revere God and reverence God. But it's a pretty small number of people, isn't it, when you think about it? If you look at the world, you look at the percentages of people who are even Christians, quote-unquote, and that doesn't mean that we reverence God. So the wisdom from above is the kind that goes and connects with the purity of God and brings the purity of God into the world around us. Now, that's done through the law, because the law explains what God's purity is, but it's more than that. It's bringing God's pure heart into the world. And that's why you and I have been given a new heart, because we're able to go into heavenly places, experience the wisdom of God, and bring it back into the world around us. And we're able to shoot it out in the relationships that we have. So first of all, purity. So if you want to know that you're experiencing the wisdom of God, it's going to be in the area of purity. You can be sure that if you are experiencing impurity, impure thoughts, things that you know deep in your heart are wrong, you can know that those are not the wisdom that's from above. It's why I get so concerned about our leaders, because I look at this list and I go, it doesn't seem like that's the kind of wisdom that they are exhibiting, you know, based on their lives. And I'm not just talking about our American leaders either. You look around the world and you go, ooh, creepy. Second of all, this above wisdom that transcends any kind of wisdom that will make you a trillionaire. Peaceable. And the idea here, or the word is seeming, the welfare of peace, or seeking. I don't know why I put the M in there just to throw you guys off. Seeking the welfare of peace. Peaceable. So the idea is we go and get God's wisdom and we take it and we bring peace into our part of the world. Third of all, gentle. It means equitable and yielding. The whole idea that God is equitable and that he's yielding, think about what he yields every day. Think about how God holds back his holiness every day. I was just reading yesterday about Jesus and his relationship with the Father. Why don't we see the Father? We'd be consumed. We would be consumed because of the purity and because of the holiness of God. So gentle, equitable, and yielding. This is something that's a gift from God. Equitability and yielding. You know, it's not like Solomon didn't exhibit any of these things. He did. There were a lot of things that made him sought after. It wasn't just because he was a trillionaire. It's because he had wisdom, and that wisdom was evidence to the people around him, and that's why the Queen of Sheba was able to come and see, because there were good parts of God's wisdom that were reflected. Pure, peaceable, gentle. Okay, again, the wisdom from above. If you want to know if you're experiencing God's wisdom, if you're tapping into lady wisdom, this is how you know. The opposite is true of a lack of wisdom. Reasonable. Ready for an appropriate response. Ready for an appropriate response. Think about that. how God wants to be in the words of our mouth. He wants to be in the way that we respond to the people around us, the situations that are around us. And in that, he wants us to be reasonable. That's wisdom that comes from God. That's a gift from God that he passes on to us to be used in our relationships. All of these are relational. You know, they don't have as an end for me to sit around and feel good about how reasonable I am. They're all things for me to use as far as the wisdom of God in the world around me. Full of mercy and good fruits. This is really a cool image here because the idea is one of planting. It's like we're out planting compassion, you know, planting seeds of compassion, watering compassion, you know, praying that compassion would grow. That's the wisdom of God. God is the author of compassion. Go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice. That's what he wants in the innermost being of human beings, and that's what we bring to the world around us. Also, when it comes to God's wisdom, it talks about unwavering. Resolute in principle. This is something, again, that comes from heaven. Human beings have a tendency to be very wavering. And when it comes to religion, religion can kind of prop us up a little bit and give us a little bit of help when it comes to being wavering. But it's the heart thing that really makes us unwavering in our wisdom. Resolute in principle. And then finally, the wisdom that is from above is pure, it's peaceable, it's gentle, it's reasonable, it's full of mercy, planting compassion, good fruits, unwavering, and it's also without hypocrisy. It doesn't have any pretense to it. It isn't, I'm doing what I'm doing in order to get what I can get for me. That's the wisdom that comes from the world, and this is not the wisdom that comes from God. Seeds of wisdom grow into righteousness. And so, it's like we've been given this unlimited access to the wisdom of God. We go to the presence of God and we take the seeds of God and we bring them and we have an opportunity to plant them in the world. But if we don't value the seeds of wisdom, if we don't value true wisdom, why would we spend our lives cultivating something that ultimately can't be seen? It's the reason why people would rather pursue $2.1 trillion in wealth, because you can see it. And you can benefit from it. What's the benefit in this kind of wisdom? Peace. Peace in the soul. What's the benefit of this kind of wisdom? Spreading peace to people around us. So when I think about Solomon, and turn over to Matthew 21. So Jesus is in a conflict with the scribes and the Pharisees, surprise, surprise. I mean, it like happens almost every other chapter in the Gospels. But what do you think? So I ask you, what do you think? This parable's for you, this parable's for me. What do you think? A man had two sons, and he came to the first and he said, "Son, go work today in the vineyard." And the son answered and said, "No way. No way, Dad, I'm not going. I am not interested in doing what you want me to do. I'm not interested in spending my day that way. I am not going to go work in your vineyard." But afterwards, he regretted it. You know, you just kind of see the guy sitting there going, "Oh, man, what a way to talk to my dad." You know, maybe he had a hangover or something, and when it kind of wore off or whatever, he realized that what a dirtbag he was. And he came to his senses. And he regretted what he had said to his father. And it doesn't say he went and found his father and said, "Dad, I'm sorry." He went to the vineyard to go to work. The man came to the second, and he said the same thing. And he answered, "I will go." So he had two sons. So the second son, you know, he went up to him and he said, "Hey, would you go to the vineyard?" And he said, "Sure, Dad, I'd be happy to go to the vineyard." But he didn't go. He excused himself somehow. He didn't blatantly rebel against his father like his other brother had done. He just kind of evaporated.
"Which of the two did the will of his father?" They said, "The first." Jesus said to them, "Truly I say to you that the tax collectors and the prostitutes will get into the kingdom of God before you." Really? How to win friends and influence people. "For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax gatherers and prostitutes didn't believe him. And you, seeing this, did not even feel remorse afterwards so as to believe him." So I don't know about you. Do you want to align with the wisdom from above or the wisdom from below? Do you want to be the wisdom from below that kind of goes, "Well, sure, I'll go," but you have no intention of being intentional in any way, shape, or form? Or do you want to recognize the reality that the natural response of a son is, "No, I don't want to go. I don't want to do it." But ultimately, you go. You go because it's the right thing to do. And that's the kind of son that you want to be. Poor Solomon, he's so conflicted. He's so conflicted in so many areas. I think I told you last week, it kind of almost makes me cry thinking about all of the expectations, all of the promise, all of the blessing, all of the preparation. But he lost his connection. And he didn't just lose it once. He lost it piece by piece by piece. His alliances that he made. You know, the picture of all the wives and all the concubines and whatever, those weren't like he was like a sexual freak or anything. I don't know that he was or he wasn't, but that wasn't the point. It was all of the alliances. He was consolidating a kingdom, and he did what made sense, and he became a 2.1 trillionaire. Wow. Wow. And what's that going to get him in the kingdom of heaven? Zip. Nothing. It'll be interesting to see. Even though Solomon frittered away his life, frittered away his wisdom, it'll be interesting to see his final disposition before God. And is he an example like other human beings who use up their inheritance and spend their inheritance on other things? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It's like so many biblical story characters and life story characters. I can't wait to be passing the room, you know, and somebody goes, I said, "What's going on in there?" Well, that's the guy that had been, you know, paralyzed for 38 years. He's in there telling his story about what it was like after 38 years, and he was waiting for the moving of the waters. And Jesus came up, and he didn't even know who he was, and he said, "Do you want to get well?" What a story that's going to be. I mean, will he be surrounded by all the other people that were there watching it happen? All the people that were going, "What about me? What about me? Why not me?" So there you go. A little something to think about. Let's all stand together. So we launch out for another week, right? Taking the wisdom of God, reaching up into heavenly places, bringing the wisdom of God, and taking the wisdom of God and passing it on in compassion to people around us. Let's read this verse together, if you wouldn't mind. "But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy."